I'll pass these up. This is basically the my phase one, phase two, phase three, and I was just riffing on it, so nothing's set in stone. And we have a few minutes for questions.
I have a small random factoid-like question. What was the name of the shop that Crowbar ran on Heat Street?
You know, I was hoping nobody would ask me that because I've forgotten. And I've also forgotten the address, but I have it on tape.
Is it Upper Haight or Lower Haight?
It was on Haight Street. And it was... It's not on the hippie map, I don't think. You know, the hippie map that the guy to made out of. Maybe, I'd have to check and get back to you, because I just don't remember.
Random follow-up question, which is, did you ever mention paraphernalia sales or not?
Paraphernalia sales?
Yeah.
Not specifically. I could certainly ask him.
We'll talk after your panel.
Okay.
Mark.
Hi. I would say that my experience, I would consider myself a phase two deadhead also, but being a New York deadhead, I think that would be different from Seattle, so there was more of a sense of community and so forth, and probably in San Francisco and New York and maybe a few other places. That would be my one suggestion.
Yeah, I wasn't suggesting that my personal experience, you know, that it just, there wasn't a dead scene. What was it? Yesterday we were talking about cool and hip. I probably was a deadhead when it really wasn't cool or hip. I just liked them. Yeah, Jake.
I have a question for Aaron. I was wondering what you make of some of the music. And I'm sorry, I stepped out because I forgot to talk about it. But what you make of the music on Working Man's as related to the lyrics? Because I've never really listened hard to the lyrics, and I realized, oh my God, yeah, that really is kind of a tragic. Yeah, there's a lot of really kind of dark stuff on that album. I mean, other than, you know, your Speedway Boogers, obviously, like Peter and stuff like that, but the music, for the most part, is very kind of upbeat. There's only really one minor mode song, which is the parts of Black Peter. Nice. It's not even, Black Peter isn't really like a sad song, where like, dollars or something like that. So, I was just wondering what your thoughts are on that, like why maybe they chose that musical representation of those lyrics.
No, I think there's a good point to that. Like Cumberland Blues is really, really groovy, and it's got a lot of like, I mean, you want to dance around when you hear it, you know. I think it just kind of, if you went all the way with really serious lyrics and didn't counteract it with something kind of happy, then it wouldn't really have worked out. Plus, for the band's history at that point, they still had to put you in a good mood, and they didn't want to just give you a dirge all the time. But yeah, I think I'm always a lyrics first, music second type of person, unfortunately. But the music, I think, it's a lot of fun. It's very warm. It's summertime type stuff for this part. So yeah.
If I could just add a point to that, a lot of the music that they're drawing from for that album, the traditional American music, uses the same sort of idea of having, you know, very dark lyrics with a major key.
Yeah, that's a big kind of feature of a lot of that music. Yeah.
They're like all the happy murder ballads.
Right. The Rockies and the Titanic. So
yeah.
Song.
Yeah.
My question is for Aaron also. I'm interested in the interpretation of the Queen of Spades that you put on. Where did you get that?
That's from David Dye, the lyric, annotated lyric. Someone had written that in. A friend of mine reads tarot, so I called her, and that's, you know. I'm going to take it for truth. I'm not sure.
Yeah. I'd like to offer an alternative interpretation. I'm a card reader myself. Mm-hmm. And the way the Queen of Spades is usually interpreted is sort of an anti-feminist mode of this bereaved woman, which makes her angry and dangerous, and that's why she's traditionally associated with death. But there are an alternative look at that is if you interpret the suit of swords as the air suit or mental activity, that she represents a particular kind of decision making in isolation, which sort of takes the pejorative loneliness and bereavement and rejection part out of it. I mean, I've often wondered why he said Queen of Spades rather than Jack of Spades or King of Spades. I mean, there are a number of other things, and I think that she's there as a warning and not necessarily as a prediction.
Thank you.
Rebecca?
Yeah,
general comment, not a question, but I thought it was very interesting that, you brought class into your analysis. I'm a sociologist, so class is important to us. And the reason I thought it was interesting in this, in the context of this particular conference, is that yesterday we had a discussion about how, although many of much of the music was drawn from African American culture, yet the audience was not African American. And I would posit that I think, although there certainly were people who didn't have much money and everything in the crowd, that right from the beginning the crowd came from fairly affluent backgrounds. And so you're bringing up, I hadn't thought of this before, the class, you know, the working class content is also another, this is another part of the pattern here where the music, the lyrics and the music aren't necessarily from the experience of the audience. I just think it's interesting, and I just like to suggest we keep that in the back of our minds, because although you can explain this by certain things that explain all music audience, like, you know, race segregation of audiences, and of course if you have money to buy tickets, you're going to have, you know, you've got some discretionary income, but it's just interesting in this particular context because of the content.
Somebody made that point about the first album of Crosby, Stills, Nash, where they're sitting in this impoverished, on the porch of this impoverished house, and here's these ultra-rich rock stars.
That's hip and cool, that's not impoverished.
Oh, okay, excuse me. Somebody made that point.
Yes, sir. This question's for Scott. With your classifications of the phases, have you considered adding a fifth phase for, like, maybe second?
Post-mortem? No, actually, well, you can't have a pre because the Deadhead couldn't have existed before the Grateful Dead, even though. But absolutely, I mean, there's nothing sacred about those four. I mean, if they're turned out to be 29 and a half when all is said and done, that's fine. But yeah, yesterday's panel in the evening was perfect for that, how it'll probably come up in surprising ways in the future. But there is no Grateful Dead band, of course, so yeah, that's an excellent point. Any more questions? We have about 4 minutes. If this group likes to talk,
it's a really good panel. Thank you.
Linda, yes.
Yeah, actually, can I ask Aaron a question? You're working on your PhD in English.
I just finished applying, so we'll see.
Okay. I'm just curious, as a student, have you had any, what kind of support have you gotten from your professors, or lack of support have you gotten for your work on the Grateful Dead?
I haven't stuck primarily, I should go ahead and own up, to the Grateful Dead. My first paper was James Joyce and Jim Morrison.
Oh my God! I was in the Dead 2 years ago. Here,
but some are very really into it, and some are, you need to write a serious paper and get off of this stuff. So, but it's, I don't really, you know, it's, I'm interested in it, so I don't really care.